This is a Federal News Network podcast.
The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Sean Kelly, who is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly, former CISO at EPA and former deputy CIO at Veterans Affairs on Federal News Network. Cyber Chat, where government leaders come to discuss the hottest cyber topics affecting us today. Now your host, Sean Kelly.
Hello. Today I'm speaking with Soraya Correa, Chief Procurement Officer at DHS. Soraya, how are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful, Sean. It's great to see you again.
Thank you for joining me. Here we are, beginning of the year, the end of the, as a lot of us think of it, September has come and gone, things have calmed, right?
No.
A lot of us have talked recently in the contracted world, and there's not really a slow period anymore.
No, there isn't. There really isn't. As soon as you finish, 1 year, you're already well into the next year, starting your acquisition planning. And I think we're getting better at that. And I think that's extremely important. There really shouldn't be a lull, because as we're wrapping up 1 year, we should be thinking about what's coming down the pike. And in an agency like the Department of Homeland Security, where our mission is constantly evolving and the threats are constantly changing, I think it becomes even more important to be completely engaged with our customers, our program offices, to ensure that we're properly planning for what's coming down the pike, for every contingency that could be out there.
Yeah, I know when I was in the government, I used to look forward to October. And it doesn't seem like October is really that slow anymore.
Well, I don't want you to think we don't look forward to October. We do. It's an opportunity to start again, because September 30th is always grueling. But the reality is that I think it's a continuous process anymore. And I think that's a good thing, actually.
I do, too. There's a lot of exciting things happening at DHS. Of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about CISA. But you're in procurement. You're in contracting.
Right.
Has a lot changed from a contracting standpoint with the formation of CISA?
I wouldn't say that a lot has changed. We're certainly revisiting some of the existing contracts that we have. I've already been to a couple of strategy sessions with some of the leadership at CISA to talk about how we fulfill their needs, how we engage with them, to come up with new approaches on how we do our contracting for them so that we can get their contracts in place a little bit more quickly, a little bit more efficiently, and ensure that they're getting the right resources. So through the use of our Procurement Innovation Lab, our Office of Selective Acquisitions that does our classified procurements, as well as our Office of Procurement Operations that does the unclassified, we're trying to come together with them and say, how do we get this done for you a little bit more quickly, a little bit more efficiently, and take advantage of the technologies and the tools that are out there to get it to them as quickly as possible.
In DHS, under you, I remember there were always some innovative ways of doing contracting. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about some of those things that you're doing with CISA, that you brought some innovation to what I think a lot of people would have thought could never be innovative, which is contracting?
So some of the things that we're focusing on, if you've heard of our Procurement Innovation Lab, and if you've heard about our Procurement Innovation Lab Bootcamp, we're actually going out and teaching people some of these techniques that we've developed, which really aren't new techniques. They're techniques that have always existed. It's just that over time, people have become uncomfortable using them because sometimes they require taking a little bit of risk. For example, oral presentations, the use of oral presentations, or the use of evaluation criteria that is more show me, don't tell me. In other words, prove your process to me, demonstrate your process to me, or demonstrate your product. So those are some of the things that we're doing. Voluntary down selects, where we ask an offeror to submit some level of information, we take a look at that information, and that information could be in the form of a video or a sample task or something like that. We look at it and we tell the offeror if they're really on the right track for the procurement. But it's voluntary whether they continue through the process or whether they withdraw themselves and not bid on the contract. So these are some of the things that we're trying to do to be a little bit more innovative and make sure that, number one, we're doing a better job of engaging industry because we get them in and out of the process a little faster. But more importantly, we provide our program offices with better assurance that they're getting the right source, that they're getting the kind of information that instills confidence in them, that they're getting the right resources. So, even with CISA on a couple of procurements, we've done things like testing. For example, for our recent hunt and incident response contract, we actually set up a technical scenario for them to come in and show us their approach, how they would go about looking at a particular scenario, how they would assess it, and what kind of information we would get. It was done in a one-day session. Instead of a written proposal, they demonstrate what they're doing. So that's an example of one that we're doing.
No, and I think that's exciting. Is it too early to ask this question maybe, but are you seeing a difference in the performance of the contracts when you take that kind of approach?
We actually are. So in our Procurement Innovation Lab, what we do is a process that we call testing and sharing. So first we test the process, we engage the process. It's called testing, but we're doing it on real procurements. But we're also sharing that information, sharing with folks what we're doing. But one of the things that makes the program successful is that we do a continuous monitoring of how the process is going, not only during the procurement, but post-procurement. So a year later, we're going back and talking to folks that have used these techniques and selected vendors using some of these techniques and saying, so how's it going? Is the contractor performing well? Are you satisfied with it? And what we're seeing is people seem to be more satisfied with the sources that they're selecting, the products that they're getting. And I think that's the important part of this. It's about gaining more confidence in the resources that you're getting, the products and services that you're buying.
Well, and it also comes across as a real partnership, right? I mean,
yes, it does.
You don't just make an award and walk away.
Correct.
Which you and I both know has been a legendary critique of the contracting shops.
Correct.
You actually engage them afterwards.
Exactly. We're staying engaged with our program offices as well as our vendors. And here's the really important thing. I believe that what's really important about this is making sure that industry feels as invested in the procurement as all of us are.
That's awesome.
In other words, to make sure that industry feels they stepped into the right contract, they're comfortable that they can perform, that they understand the requirement. So I'm really pushing hard, and I have been since I came into this position, to make sure that we're providing draft RFPs and draft eval criteria and asking industry what they really think, how they would do it, and engaging industry to help us solve the problem, to say, tell us how you would do this. How have you done this before? And I think that's extremely important, and I think industry feels a little bit more engaged. They feel a little bit more invested. The other thing that that does for us, it lets industry self-select themselves out. If they don't think they're the right company for the procurement, I believe in industry. I believe that they will step away if they don't think they're the right source.
I agree. I know. I totally agree. There's been a lot of talk about supply chain.
Yeah.
And from I've talked to GSA, and I've talked to some technical companies. What's your take on supply chain? Is it really bringing us the most secure products? Is it, and how does that really come across from a procurement standpoint?
So the first thing that I would say about supply chain, you're never
going
to have.
I'm sorry, cyber supply chain.
Yeah, cyber supply chain. Yeah. So a couple of things. First of all, you're never going to have a 100% solution. It's about understanding the risk. It's about, you know, having a well-informed and educated team working on the procurement, especially at the very planning stage, at the early planning stages, to really understand what we're buying, how we're going to buy it, and what are the risks. What are the cybersecurity risks inherent to that product, that service, or the combination? And then how do we mitigate that? Sometimes it is about eliminating certain components, you know, disqualifying it. But more importantly, it's really about understanding what are the answers you're going to get and how do you mitigate that. And that means that your procurement team, the team that's going to handle this acquisition, has to consist of more than just a program manager or a COR and a CO. Okay. It has to include, you know, your security officers. It has to include your privacy officers. It has to include sometimes even folks from the classified side, right, from the intelligence and intelligence and information assurance side, because we have to understand what we're buying, how we're going to buy it, and what are the inherent risks so that we can put the proper mitigation strategies in place. And procurement becomes an essential part of that because you want to deal with that as early as possible in the acquisition process because it factors into the pricing, what companies are going to bid, how they're going to bid, and what they're going to bid. So it becomes extremely important to really understand the role that procurement plays in that and get us in there as early as possible and for us to bring the right people to the table at all times.
My guest today, Soraya Correa, Chief Procurement Officer at DHS. I am Sean Kelly, and this is Cyber Chat on Federal News Network. Soraya, GSA ITC also has a big cyber supply chain presence. How do the two work together?
So we have representation on their cyber supply chain group. In fact, our office, our category manager, we're the category manager for all things security. So you're familiar with category management and the different areas. So we're doing category management for all things security. So we're an active participant with GSA, and we work regularly in partnership with them. We're constantly talking about what are the things that we're buying, how we're going to buy them, and how do we introduce more protections for the government on these products and services.
Okay. And, you know, as we talk about like cyber hygiene clauses that were brought back in 2015, you know, now we have, well, we're going into our fifth year. How did that work? How's that working? How has it worked out?
It seems to be working well. I'm not going to say it's perfect because some of it is about first assessing the risks associated with what you're buying. Are we going to be using PII? Are we going to be giving PII or SPII to the vendor? How are we engaging with the vendor? And that determines to what extent we incorporate those clauses. If you'll recall, when we put those clauses together, we really tried to give maximum flexibility to the program manager and the procurement office to identify what aspects of the clauses they would incorporate. Sometimes you just want them to have the training. You want to make sure their people are properly trained. Sometimes you want to make sure you introduce the reporting requirements in the event of a data breach, which we all hope never happens, of course. And then sometimes you really want them to give you certain information about the systems they're going to use, how they're going to store your data, et cetera. So what we tried to do was create the flexibility and say, program manager, contracting officer, COR, people involved in the procurement, you do an assessment of what you're buying, how you're going to engage with the vendor, mm-hmm. and what infrastructure they have available to store your data, and then determine how you're going to use the clause. I think we've had varying degrees of success, of course. Generally speaking, I would say we're successful in that we have the clauses available. We consolidated training, so the training is consistent across the department. Every now and then, we find places where we didn't insert the clause, and we actually probably needed it. But by and large, I think we've been very successful with that effort.
No, and I think it's worked out well. When I was a CISO, I thought those clauses did help. And I know my staff used them quite often. And so let's talk about that. Different agencies, you know, I don't know, and I haven't been very heavily involved in DHS contracts, but I haven't heard any complaints. Okay. I can say I've complained about procurement shops a lot in both my military government and contracting career. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that DHS, is it the people that you attract? Is it the mission? Or is it just that you put the best trained folks on the ground that you can?
So first of all, people do complain. I mean, there's always somebody out
there. Well, there's always someone who's going to
complain,
right?
There's always going to be somebody who complains, okay? But I'd like to think that part of it is that it is the people. I firmly believe, in fact, when I was asked to come back to be the chief procurement officer, I was excited about coming to this team because I know the commitment and the passion that they bring. And the people that we're hiring are people who are deeply committed to the mission of DHS. And they really care about what they're doing. They really care and understand the importance of what they do. And so I think at the end of the day, you know, people can complain about the procurement process and that it's slow. And a lot of that is a lack of understanding because sometimes procurement don't control the entire process. But what's really important is we always deliver. At the end of every fiscal year, the money does get obligated. We put the right contracts in place. Sometimes things don't work out for many circumstances, but we also take the corrective actions that are needed. And so I think the reason you don't hear as much about it is because there is that deep commitment to the mission, that teamwork, that collaboration, that personally, I will say passion for the mission of DHS, because I know I share it with our employees every day. And it's just an honor and a privilege to represent them. It really is.
So how do you keep them? I mean, cyber is a very, it's not as technical as it used to be, and it's not as foreign as it used to be. How do you keep your workforce able to have conversations with the program managers, with the contract community, so that they can be productive as contracting cybersecurity services and products?
So one of the things that I am continually encouraging is, number one, regular and meaningful communications between our procurement teams and the program offices, as well as our procurement teams with industry and the program offices. And one of the other things that we try to do is incorporate it in our training. So we're really, when new legislation comes out that impacts cybersecurity, or when we get bulletins or information about what's going on in the cyber world, we try to get that out to our workforce. We try to make sure that we regularly are keeping them informed of what's going on, why it's important. And I think DHS as a whole is doing a much better job of that. We get regular notices and reminders of how we all as employees are part of that cybersecurity and protecting the agency's information. But we try to incorporate that in our training. I also try to get out there and talk to the workforce, at least on a semi-annual basis, talk to our entire procurement community about what's going on in our world. Gotcha. And I try to bring guest speakers in. Our heads of contracting, I meet with them each month. We meet on a regular basis. I bring guest speakers in to talk about new initiatives or to refresh their memory on what's PII, what's SPII, what's the privacy office doing, what is cybersecurity, what is our chief information security officers doing. So okay. It's about, you know, that awareness and keeping people engaged and involved in the discussion. I think that's the most important thing. And not just making it a training class, making it a part of a regular dialogue.
No, and how, if it does, how does that get spread across other agencies? So DHS does really well, but there's other agencies that are, to their defense, they're under-resourced. Mm-hmm. But is there a lot of sharing amongst the procurement officer, chief procurement officers, amongst the agencies to bring it up? Like, there's a CISO council, there's a CIO council. Is there a procurement council?
There is a procurement council. In fact, the Office of Federal Procurement Policy hosts a quarterly meeting of all the senior procurement executives across the government, the Chief Acquisition Officers Council. And that's where we have regular discussions about what's going on in our world. What's the new legislation? What are the new business processes that we're looking at? How do we improve our posture in the area of cybersecurity? And sometimes we combine the councils. Sometimes you'll have the government-wide CIO Council and the Senior Procurement Executives Councils come together. In fact, one of those examples would be when FITARA was implemented. Mm-hmm. We came as a group to talk about how do we do this. So we have regular discussions. The Office of Federal Procurement Policy is very good about sharing information across the senior procurement executives. And I'll share this with you. You know, I've been in this business for 39 years, both in procurement and program management. I think the collaboration across agencies is far better than I have ever seen.
That's great.
Senior procurement executives, we reach out to each other all the time to share ideas, to ask questions. How are you doing this? How are you handling that? Do you have information? Have you done a procurement of this type? And I think that's what's going to make our government stronger and better, that continuous collaboration, sharing information and sharing resources as much as possible. And I think some of the new technologies that are around, whether it's blockchain, artificial intelligence, all these things are coming together to make us far better and more efficient. Are we going to be perfect? Of course not, you know, because there's always room for growth, right?
Agreed.
But we're getting far better. And I am really excited about how we share information across our communities, not just across the procurement community, but across the federal community wide. The engagement, the chief executive officers, the CXOs, as we like to call ourselves, the CFO, the CPO, the CIO, the CSO, we are all talking to one another. It's no longer that stovepipe approach to managing. We actually bring each other into the conversations to make sure that we're looking at things holistically to provide the best service at the end of the day to the folks who protect the homeland.
Okay. My guest today is Soraya Correa, Chief Procurement Officer at DHS. I am Sean Kelly, and this is Cyber Chat on Federal News Network. Soraya, before we were talking about sharing of information, and that's at the contracting level. But we have two other parties involved in this dance, which is the program managers or the customer of yours, mm-hmm. and we have the contract community. So let's start with the program management side. Mm-hmm. I need a service. I'm a program manager. Mm-hmm. What's the best way to go to my contracting officer? I need a cybersecurity product or service. Okay. What's the best way to start? And what's the best way to be prepared so the process doesn't take long and is the best possible way to go forward?
So as soon as you know you have a need, even if you haven't really gotten your budget or your funding, that's all right. Let's start having that conversation as early as possible. In fact, I really prefer to see us engage in that conversation even before you put pen to paper. Let's talk about what's the problem that you're trying to solve. And I think from a program perspective, you should be approaching your contracting officer, your head of contracting, depending on what levels you're working in the organization. But let's have that conversation about what you're trying to do. How are you trying to do it? What are some of the factors that limit you? What are some of the flexibilities that you need? I want our contracting officers asking a few more questions, focusing a little bit more on what do we know about this product or service? Who is the community that serves us from an industry standpoint? Should we be going out to industry right now and saying, we're thinking about doing this, mm-hmm. and here's our timetable for doing this? What are some of the criteria that you would use to evaluate this? How can you test this? What would give you more confidence? How are you going to use the contract once it's awarded? How does your funding come out? Does it come out on a quarterly basis? Okay. Or are you going to be able to apply full funding? do we really buy this fixed price, or do we use time and materials or cost type contracts? These are the kinds of questions that we should be having very early on in the process, even before you put pen to paper. I think we focus a lot sometimes on the paperwork for compliance, and what I want our COs to focus on is more fulfilling the need. Compliance is not that hard if you really understand what you're doing.
Agreed.
And the more we talk up front about it and better understand the requirement, the easier that procurement's going to flow. And bring industry in as early as possible.
I agree. You know, you said something earlier about the training, mm-hmm. about cybersecurity training, bring the privacy folks, bring guest speakers. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm trying to think back to my government time and my military time. You know, we get PMP training, we get product training. But there's not a whole lot of contracting training. I think once in my career, I had actual formal contracting training. Is there a lot of that going on at DHS, or should it be?
In fact, a couple of things. So one of the things that I try to tell folks is we actually created some modules that are available to our folks. We created some videos, if you will, of in modules of Procurement 101. Procurement for the non-procurement person, because one of the things that I've seen in my career and one of the things that I've tried to change and I'm trying to continuously change in our culture is sometimes we get a little too technical in our conversation. I always tell my contracting officers, I never say FAR to my customer. FAR is the opposite of near as far as they're concerned.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. It is my job to know the acquisition regulations and to keep in conformance. And what I have to help you understand is what are the rules of engagement without getting too technical and too legalistic. So I think it's about having a conversation. It's about providing training that is the non-procurement training for the person who's going to be involved in procurement. So we created a series of modules. They're like 5 to 10 minutes each. I think the longest one might be 15 minutes. Where we're just talking to those people that are not procurement folks and saying, this is what we mean when we say procurement and contracting. This is how you go about the process. Here's what you need to know, and here's what you need to do to engage with us. Okay. And I think that's extremely important. And the more we do that, the better we can improve communications. The other thing that I also try to remind contracting officers is you never start the conversation with no. No matter what you ask me, if you say, Soraya, I want a cost plus award fee contract to do XYZ, the answer is never no. The answer is, let's talk about what you're trying to do, because that might not be the best solution. When we start a conversation that way, we're helping each other out.
I agree.
But if you say, no, that's the wrong way, you already ended the conversation. A lot of people take that as a negative, and they think you're being bureaucratic, and they want to walk away.
Agreed. Before we switch over to contracting, we've read for years about this mass exodus of government people that are going to retire, they're going to leave, and all that. And contracting is one of those jobs that you just can't. There's not a huge connect between the civilian government, civilian world, and this. And so, how are we preparing for that in the future from the procurement community?
Sure. So one of the things is, first of all, I always talk about mission. I rarely talk about, quote, we're here to do contracting. I talk about we're here to deliver results. We're here to be business advisors, to support the customers and find them solutions, because the solution may not always be a contract, right? And then the other thing is trying to hire a workforce that really gets a good feel for what the mission is. We got to get out there and talk in English to our workforce. No longer are people into these stovepiped career fields. We got to talk about what you can do beyond contracting. Right. I'm a person that moved around in my career. I was in IT. I worked in program management and then came back to procurement. So that's the conversation we got to have. No longer are we just saying it's a lifetime career of contracting. In fact, I try to encourage folks to go back and forth between program management and procurement, because it's always good to have the customer's perspective.
It
you
is.
Know what I mean?
It is. So on the contracting side, what is the best way for companies that want to do business with DHS to approach DHS?
So one of the things we've established is our industry liaison program. We started that several years ago, and it's been hugely successful. Companies reach out. They can go out to our website. There's a list of our industry liaisons out there. They can reach out through the industry liaisons, but I certainly encourage companies to participate in things like our strategic industry conversation that we host once a year, participate through industry associations and our reverse industry days. And again, not to be afraid to reach out to my office. We're open for business, and we're happy happy to talk to companies, large, small, whatever size company, companies that have never done business with the government. One of the things that we try to encourage is these innovative companies to come in and work with us, because there are a lot of tools that we can use to get to companies like that, to be more commercial-like in how we buy. And we're using those tools successfully.
Yeah, and innovative companies usually are scared of the government. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to do it. I don't want to do it. I'll just stay away. Plus, I think there's still a belief that the government wants proven technologies. Mm-hmm. They're not going to go quite bleeding edge. Do you get the program side more willing to look at some of that bleeding edge technology nowadays?
Yes, we are, because I think the aperture has been opened. In other words, before it used to be taboo. Oh, you're going to try something new and it might not work. And people were fearful of failure. I think the understanding is there that to be innovative, to be able to address the threats that we confront. Like I always say, our enemies are not limited by rules and regulations.
Agreed.
But we are. So we got to be a little bit better about that. We got to be a little bit more open to understanding that we're going to try some things and they're going to work and some things are not going to work.
Agreed.
And I think there's greater acceptance of that. I'm hearing that. I'm seeing that in government. So we've been able to stand up things like our Silicon Valley Innovation Program. We have another program, the Commercial Solutions Opening Pilot, which gives us the opportunity to start with a blank sheet of paper and bring in these companies that normally wouldn't do business with the government and say, let's negotiate these terms and conditions. Let's look at this. You can keep your intellectual property rights. Yeah. We're just interested in how we can perhaps use this technology or incorporate it into what we're doing today.
Okay.
So it's really exciting times, I think.
And those, when they go through these programs, do they have to worry about vehicles? Because vehicles are kind of what everybody believes you need to do business.
So it's always good to have vehicles if you have them. That's great. But no, you don't have to have vehicles to do business. I've long held that's a myth. If you have a product or service that is unique, that you can sell to the government, that solves the problem, we have many mechanisms to get to companies, whether we're using other transaction authority, the commercial solutions opening pilot that I just shared with you, commercial contract. I mean, there's gazillions of ways that we can get to companies. Companies do get a little hung up because there's so much talk about best-in-class contracts and category management. But I can share with you, I've sat in many panels with Leslie Fields, the deputy administrator of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy. And what category management and best-in-class contracting is all about is about trying to, you know, understand what we buy in common across the federal government so we can get bang for the buck and hopefully take our folks off of those types of routine buys and let them focus on the more complex buys. Okay. If we write more contracts to buy, I don't know, desktops, laptops, that kind of stuff, then if I'm not doing that, I'm focusing more on the DHS mission buys, the important critical buys. So I don't want people to get hung up on the vehicles. We've tried to create flexibility in that. We identify the vehicles that best meet our needs, the best-in-class contracts that are out there that best meet our needs, call it a portfolio of contracts. In fact, that's what Eagle Next Gen is,
okay.
If you've heard of that.
Yep.
And then we always look at, so what do we need to buy that's unique to us that needs to go in that portfolio for us to share either across DHS or with other agencies?
Okay. My guest today has been Soraya Correa, Chief Procurement Officer at DHS. I am Sean Kelly. Thank you for listening. You can keep up with the latest cybersecurity news at cyberchatnews.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Sean Kelly. See you next month.
You've been listening to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly on Federal News Network. Tune in Friday mornings at 10:30 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.